Sute Devi Kanamami Hari Priye Yascha Kripasindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 27 and 28. Sparshan kritva bahir bahyams chakshus chayvantare bruvoho pranapano samo kritva nasabhyantara charinau yatendriyamano buddhir munir moksha parayanaha vigate cha bhayakrodho yasada Mukta Eva Saha. Translation. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses, and intelligence, the transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Being engaged in Krishna consciousness, one can immediately understand one's spiritual identity, and then one can understand the Supreme Lord by means of devotional service. When one is well situated in devotional service, one comes to the transcendental position, qualified to feel the presence of the Lord in the sphere of one's activity. This particular position is called liberation in the Supreme. After explaining the above principles of liberation in the Supreme, the Lord gives instruction to Arjuna as to how one can come to that position by the practice of the mysticism or yoga known as Ashtanga Yoga, which is divisible into an eightfold procedure called Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. In the sixth chapter of this subject of yoga is explicitly detailed, and at the end of the fifth chapter it is only preliminarily explained. One has to drive out the sense objects such as sound, touch, form, taste, and smell by the pratyahara process in yoga, and then keep the vision of the eyes between the two eyebrows and concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed lids. There is no benefit in closing the eyes altogether, because then there is every chance of falling asleep. Nor is there benefit in opening the eyes completely, because then there is the hazard of being attracted by sense objects. The breathing movement is restrained within the nostrils by neutralizing the up-moving and down-moving air within the body. By practice of such yoga, one is able to gain control over the senses, refrain from outward sense objects, and thus prepare oneself for liberation in the Supreme. This yoga process helps one become free from all kinds of fear and anger, and thus feel the presence of the Supersoul in the transcendental situation. In other words, Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of executing yoga principles. This will be thoroughly explained in the next chapter. A Krishna conscious person, however, being always engaged in devotional service, does not risk losing his senses to some other engagement. This is a better way of controlling the senses than by the Ashtanga Yoga. Sparshan kritva bahir bahyam chakshus chaibantare bruvo pranapano samo kritva nasabhyantaracharino yatendriya mano buddhir munir moksha parayanaha vigate cha bhaya krodho yasadha mukta eva saha. So this is the Ashtanga Yoga system that Lord Krishna is describing. Ashta means eight, and Anga means limbs or divisions. So eight parts to this system of yoga, beginning with Yama. Yama means rules, things that should not be done. Niyama means regulations, things that should be done. For example, celibacy, brahmacharya, that is part of the yam niyam. One should avoid this illicit sex, and brahmacharya means one should practice celibacy. These are preliminary. If one wants to practice this type of Ashtanga Yoga system, he has to follow that, those principles. And of course, things like eating food that's offered to Krishna, that is part of yam and niyam. This is preliminary. This is before one even begins the more developed stage of yoga. One has to follow certain rules and regulations. No intoxication, no gambling, these things. Yam niyam. Any questions about those two? Okay. So we'll go on to asana. Asana means sitting postures. There are different postures for sitting in yoga practice. Generally, they practice the Padmasana, the lotus posture. And the reason for this is that this keeps the head and the back very straight, and it makes the breathing within the body go very smoothly, because there are 10 different types of airs in the body. Apana, Udana, some airs go up, and some airs go down, and some airs are used for keeping the equilibrium and the balance. Some airs are for digesting food, some airs for moving the legs and the arms. This is all done by hydraulic air systems in the body. You've seen trucks. On the back of the truck, they have the lift. Goes up and down. So they usually have some hydraulic lift. It means it's run by air. So similarly, our arms. This is all done by airs. Even our brain requires air. That's why if you can try an experiment, stop breathing for maybe 5 or 10 minutes and see if everything still works. No. Your brain won't work, the arms won't work, the legs won't work, everything stops working because the air has to be going. So this is the principle on which the yoga system works. Pranayama. Yama means to control, and prana means air. So it means controlling the air. And the method is given in the Bhagavatam is... They take one side of the nostril and they inhale. And then they hold it in for as long as they can. And then they exhale through the other side. Not like that. No. And then exhale and keeping it out. And then again inhaling through the other nostril and keeping it in. So this goes on. And if one does this, then one's mind becomes peaceful, it becomes free from fear, from anxiety. Then he's ready for the next step. That's not the end, that's just the third. No, that's the fourth. Then pratyahara. Now, pratyahara means he has to keep the eyes half closed. Why? Why not all the way closed? Who is listening? Yes. If you put the eyes all the way closed and they go to sleep, the tendency is there. And what happens if the eyes are all the way open? Huh? They dry up? No. Hmm? Yes, because when the eyes are fully open, then you see everything that's going on and become attracted. The idea is to block out all the material senses. So that is called pratyahara. Block it out. So the way to block it out is keep the eyes half closed, like this, staring at the tip of the nose. So he's not looking. If something walks by, he's not watching. But he's not falling asleep either. So this is the pratyahara. And he tries not to be concerned about anything that's going on. And that's why they sit, the yogis. Do you know what they sit on? I'll give you a clue. They sit on some kind of a skin. Deer skin. Why do they sit on a deer skin? Yeah, the snakes don't like to come where there's deer skin. There's something about deer skin. Because otherwise he's sitting there meditating, and if he wasn't sitting on a deer skin, you know, he'd be afraid, oh, there's a snake, you know. And that would ruin his meditation because he'd be trying to meditate and then be worried about the snake that was... So by sitting on the deer skin, at least that's one thing. He doesn't have to worry about snakes don't come. So if you're going to try this practice, be sure and get a deer skin, a real deer skin. Otherwise, you'll have to worry about snakes. So, blocking out all the different sense objects. It means the sounds and the sights and the touch and the taste. He's not eating anything. He's not smelling, he's not breathing even. After a while, in the beginning he practices breathing, but later on he actually stops breathing. Now we think that if you stop breathing, then you die. And that's what would happen to us if we stop breathing. But because he's practiced and he has learned to control his bodily organs so perfectly that he slowed everything down to the point where He doesn't even require air to keep going. So you know what happens when he does that? You know what happens to his lifespan? It increases. Why? Why would his lifespan increase? But what would that have to do with his lifespan? In other words, if he was supposed to live for 70 or 80 years, and if he's sitting there not breathing, so why wouldn't he just die in 70 or 80 years like we would expect? Yes, because he's not using up his air supply. When everyone is born, they're given a certain amount of air. It's like when you go underwater in the scuba diving. Right? You have a tank or two tanks. So you have maybe 1 hour in each tank. So you're down there and you're breathing. One tank is gone. You switch over the ledge, switch it over to the other tank. So you have another hour. Now, if you keep breathing, then you better go up at the end. But let's say you stop breathing. Then you still have an hour. You have another tank. You haven't used it. So in the same way, we have a certain air supply, a certain number of breaths we're allowed in this life. And if I use them up very quickly, I'm breathing very quickly, then I use them up fast. I die sooner. And if I can slow down the breathing, like the yogis, then I can extend it. So these yogis, they know the art of stopping their breathing, so they extend their lives. Every 12 years, there's a big festival in India. Do you know what that's called? Kumbh Mela. And this Kumbh Mela is held where? Allahabad, yes. So, and what happens at Kumbh Mela? Who comes? Yogis come? Not only yogis, but everyone, all kinds of people. Swamis and gurus and everything comes. And millions and millions of people come for this. But also the yogis come. Some of these yogis are up in the Himalayas, and some of them are sitting by different sacred rivers. And some of them know the art. They just dip, touch the water, and phew, immediately they appear. Because they have mystic powers by practicing yoga. So by touching the water, they can transport themselves. So, at this Kumbh Mela, you'll go around and some of the people you'll see are great yogis. And they'll look like young men, maybe 30, 40 years old. But actually, if you stay there, you'll find that someone, his grandfather showed him this yogi and said that his grandfather showed him the yogi, and his grandfather showed him the yogi. Going back, this yogi's 500 years old. He looks like a young man, but so many grandfathers have shown the same yogi in the same place and said yes. So now he's been living for 500 years because he's practicing this pranayama. He's controlling his breathing exercise, breathing process. So he's living for 500 years. This is not uncommon at Kumbh Mela, you'll find. Now in this age, 500 years is very extraordinary. But in previous ages, for example in Satya Yuga, this wasn't, 500 years was considered a very short time for sitting and meditating. There was a sage named Vishvamitra who meditated for 60,000 years. In this posture, just sitting there. Just imagine, 60,000 years. This is what people do to go to try to attain Vaikuntha. In previous ages, it's a difficult process. 60,000 years. Valmiki Muni also, he was meditating. So, this process is being described. Pratyahara, blocking out all the senses. Then, dharana. To concentrate. Concentrate the mind on the super soul within the heart. Because actually there is a expansion of Paramatma in the heart of every living being. Four-handed Vishnu is there in the heart. And by practicing this type of yoga, that form of the Lord becomes visible. And then one can see the Lord and meditate. Dharana, dhyan, and ultimately samadhi, or fixed mind, trance. In that trance, one is feeling great bliss or happiness. So this is the Ashtanga Yoga system, to meditate upon the form of Narayan. Some people do this, some yogis, but their goal is not the ultimate, to attain Narayan or Vaikuntha, but their goal is to get mystic powers. Because before one achieves perfection, he gets mystic powers. And these mystic powers are also described as 8 in number. Anima, siddhi, he can become smaller than the smallest. That means he can become so small that you can't even see him. It appears like he's disappearing. And then he can leave through a hole in the door. And then he's out of the room. There was one Trilanga Swami about 75 years ago. And he used to walk around naked on the street. So the police, they arrested him because it's not legal to walk around naked. So they put him in the jail. Then he went out. Next day he was out again, walking naked. So they arrested him again. Next day he was out again. Arrested him again. Next, every day there was nothing they could do because he had this mystic power. He could go out through the bars. He just made himself small. He just went out. So that is anima siddhi, lagima. Lagima means one becomes lighter than air so he can fly. Like the Siddha yogis from Siddha Loka. They can fly without airplanes. They don't need wings, they can just fly. They can transport themselves. Narad Muni has this mystic power. Therefore he's flying all over the material universe, the spiritual universe. This is real freedom, to be able to fly from the material universe to the spiritual universe. When one becomes a great yogi, he can do that. And there are other mystic powers that one gets. So sometimes these yogis, they become attracted by these material mystic powers. And they use them to attract people. Even today, there are some people, some persons who've practiced some yoga, and they have a little mystic power. Maybe they can make some ashes appear or something like that. So people are very excited, and they think that this is wonderful. So the yogis, they get some pleasure out of this, that they have followers and things like that. People are attracted by this. Like magic. People like magic. But that's not the real goal of yoga. The real goal of yoga is to link with the Supreme, with Krishna. And better than this type of yoga is bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, where one links with the Supreme through loving devotion. That is better, by chanting and engaging in devotional service. So, we'll stop there. Are there any questions? So the first question was that they don't have to serve. They're not free. Because as soon as they try to enjoy the mystic powers, then they become entangled in karma again. Because now they're trying to enjoy sense gratification. It's like all these yogis today. So-called yogis. Maybe they have a little mystic power. Or they may, one of the mystic powers is that one can control others' minds. So sometimes they come here to the West and they bewilder people's minds and then they take their money. Sometimes happens. Then they go away. Then they disappear with the money. So there's a lot of this going on. So they're implicated in karma by that activity. And as far as the yoga practice, if they meditate on Super Soul, then that's also the beginning. That's Shantaras. That's the beginning of attraction to the Lord. And by meditating upon the Lord, that's a form, a passive form, a neutral form of devotional service. So that's good. That's better than the impersonalists. The impersonalists, they meditate upon Brahman, the impersonal feature. But the yogis meditate upon the Paramatma. So that is the next stage. So it is good. And they can attain Vaikuntha, ultimately. Of course, simply meditation is not the ultimate. That's the beginning. This is a beginning stage of devotion. As it goes further, just like if a husband comes home from work and he says, you know, to his wife, I'm home, and she says, she's sitting there, and he says, where's my dinner? And she says, I'm just meditating upon you. And he says, that's very nice, but where's my dinner? So, in other words, meditation is nice, but it should go to the next stage, which is dasyaras, where one begins to do some service. That's a higher stage. So that was the first part. And the second part was? The yogis that are Ashanta are the ones who are interested in the mystic powers. If they're actually fixed in trance and samadhi on Vishnu, then they're also peaceful. Because that's devotion. Because they're meditating. They're meditating upon the Supreme Personality of God in His form, which is transcendental. So those yogis are the ones who are interested in mystic powers. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami akali ashanta. Yeah. So those yogis, those are the ones who are interested in mystic powers, not the actual Paramatma realized yogis. Any other question? Excuse me? No. I haven't met any. Of course, we're fortunate that we're in the presence of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Krishna is the greatest yogi. He can make himself smaller than the smallest. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. He enters even within the atom. And at the same time, he's situated in his own abode, and he's situated in that same person is Krishna in the deity form, Lord Chaitanya. So we're fortunate that we're associating with the greatest of all yogis, Yogeshwara. And when we read the Bhagavatam and we hear about the pastimes of Narad Muni is actually present there, and all these Shukadeva Goswami, all these personalities. So we are actually associating with such great yogis by hearing about them, by hearing even their name. Even the name Krishna is Krishna, and the name Narad Muni. Narad Muni is there in his transcendental name. So we are actually associating with these great personalities. As we become more and more elevated in our consciousness, we will realize there was one in early days of our movement in 1966, the devotees organized a program for Srila Prabhupada. A big hall they rented, and they advertised, and they invited so many people, and I think only no one came. No one came. So Srila Prabhupada was not disturbed. He went ahead and had kirtan and gave a lecture, and just the devotees were there. And afterwards they were apologizing. Srila Prabhupada, "We're very sorry that no one came. And, you know, we're sorry." And he said, "Oh, you did not see? Narad Muni was there. And so many others. Shukadev Goswami was there. You didn't see?" So as we become more advanced, we'll be able to see these great personalities also. They come. Formerly they came and even ordinary people could see them on this planet, because there were so many sacrifices being performed by the great kings. Nowadays, the kings are not performing such sacrifices, but still they like to take part in the kirtans, Harinam. Just like we sing every night. Was it? Nara, was it? Shiva Shuka Narada. So that means Lord Shiva has come, and Shukadev Goswami has come, Narada has come, and Brahma is offering arti to Lord Chaitanya. So, if we keep coming to the arti, then we'll be able to see them. Well, our eyes will become transcendental, so we can appreciate. Any other questions? Yes. But of course, if one is jumping and dancing in kirtan, then that's a nice way to go. Also, another factor is there that for a devotee of the Lord, he's not under the control of his former karma anymore. He's not under the influence of how many breaths he had. Because now Krishna takes charge. So if Krishna wants, Krishna can extend his life and make it longer. Or as he wishes. That's up to Krishna. Because Krishna's above all the rules of karma. He's the controller of karma. So it doesn't matter for a devotee. You can dance as much as you like and be as enthusiastic in kirtan as you like, and your life span will be arranged by Krishna, however long he wants you to stay here. Okay? Yeah. Well, in the neophyte stage, they may not be so shanta, because they're neophytes. But in the advanced stage, then they're shanta. Yes. So neophytes, yeah, we are neophytes. So if sometimes we're not peaceful, we shouldn't be too disturbed, because after all, as we make advancement, we're more peaceful than we used to be. That's for sure. Before, not only were we sometimes unpeaceful, but we were downright miserable. At least, I can speak for most of the Westerners, maybe from the Indian culture. Maybe you, of course, your upbringing is more Vedic, so you may not have gone to such length. But many of the people in the West, they became quite disturbed by trying to live and be happy in the material world. So at least we're more peaceful than we used to be. So that's good. And if we continue, then we become more and more peaceful, because the senses become quieted. They come under control gradually as one advances. But if someone is not so peaceful, then it means he's still neophyte. Sometimes we become disturbed when we realize that we're still neophytes. We don't like to have to admit that. We're getting disturbed, but then we're thinking, why am I getting disturbed? I'm an advanced devotee. But then we read that advanced devotees don't get disturbed. So maybe I'm not so advanced. So then I think, oh no, I thought I was advanced. Anyway, process is quite humbling, and whenever we start to become a little proud, Krishna wants to show us how to be humble again. So he may give us a little distress to make us realize that we still have some advancement to make further. All right, so we'll stop there. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.